Welcome to Zephyr Yoga Inspiration. I offer these podcasts for free, and your support really does make a difference and is appreciated. To make a donation, please click the link in the episode description or visit zephyryoga.com.
We are continuing our journey working with the yamas. Remembering, the yamas are probably the most essential moral principle to practicing yoga. It's the first limb on the eighth limb path of Ashtanga yoga, not the school, not the brand, but according to the Yoga Sutras, in how a yoga student needs to practice yoga to experience the state of yoga. So this first limb is called yamas, and yamas are these moral and ethical restraints in which guides us along our journey of life, reducing karma, so we can actually have a deeper, more intimate relationship with ourselves and the world around us, being able to actually meet our end goal, ultimately, is to create lasting fulfillment, deeper contentment within, and freedom, true liberation, not just of our human suffering, the cycle of it, but Kaivalya, liberation. So this is said to be the first kind of portal. So we worked with ahimsa, non-violence, non-harming. We worked with satya, that truthfulness, honesty, and transparency in our thoughts, our words, and our actions. And then we worked with asteya, which is non-stealing of people's possessions, money, time, energy, people's rights and freedoms. This week, we are working with brahmacharya, which literally means walking or having that ethical contact with the divine or God or Brahma. So Brahma literally means one's own self, true self. What is that light that lights your awarefulness, wakefulness, consciousness? So they say that pure consciousness is what lights, and it means this ultimate unchanging reality that is always there from the moment you were conceived, as you were born, as you grew, and will be there when you die and supposedly transition over to the next lifetime. Brahma is what lights everything. It's absolute consciousness. It is the divinity behind it all. So charya literally means walking, engaging, proceeding, behaving, this conducting, moving, or going after. So it's like a verb that you are walking with God or walking with Brahma. And really it points towards staying true to one's own soul, Atman, that lights the soul. It's like a little light bulb, your soul. And what lights that light bulb is Brahma. So your true self, and you are walking the path in this lifetime of the divine itself. However, as we study brahmacharya, we find that this mostly refers to sexual chastity, abstinence, and pure sexual conduct. So brahmacharya essentially means to suppress any sexual urges and all sexual activity leading to it. Now, all the information I have studied and acquired through trying to understand brahmacharya is usually through the lens of men. Now, originally, especially in the Vedic, our kind of oldest kind of written text, the Vedas, the verbal, the oral transmission, was usually done from a Brahmin who taught his disciples who were men. There's very little evidence until modern kind of yoga that women were involved in this. So a lot of the teachings are referring to men and the aesthetic, like asana, kriya, mudras are all taught for men and their physical makeup. But we can actually start to kind of evolve that and start to see how women can do the same. But just noticing that this was originally saying, men, keep boundaries. You know, if you're going to study yoga and be a yogi, refrain from sexual activity, suppress your sexual urges, and here are the techniques in which you can take that energy and direct it towards higher states of consciousness rather than this disgusting thing called sex. If you are married, you have to be faithful, but if you are not married, you need to abstain from sex. So when we are studying the Brahmacharya, the sages, ancient sages, created kind of clear boundaries in which renunciants took a vow of celibacy, and they actually instructed to refrain from the 8 forms of sexual indulgences. So these 8 forms are thinking about sex, talking about sex, playing and joking about sex, looking intensely at someone, mainly women, but could be men, stimulating sexual urges. The 5th is secret talking about sex. The 6th is touching with sexual intent. The 7th is determination or attempts of sexual acts. And then the last one is executing the act of sex. So the idea is that you suppress your sexual urges, but you actively notice that by redirecting that energy towards higher states of consciousness, you actually help dissolve the kleshas, how the ego likes to get muddled into our own ignorance, avidya, our own egotism, sex, you know, that urge, that lusting, the attachment, raga, towards sex, or the aversion, like, oh, you know, I don't like that kind of sex, or the fear of having sex. So the kind of raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, the ego likes to kind of attach and misidentify. So it just gets all muddled up. So we want to try to dissolve our kleshas, cultivate more of a sattva guna. So dissolving the rajasic urge of craving or the tamasic urge of this demonic kind of, you know, dark urge for sex. We want to bring that energy into a sattvic state, mainly up the Sushumna Nadi, balancing out that in which we reduce by the practice of Brahmacharya, we reduce the karma in this lifetime so we can live more of a moral life as a way to end the cycle of human suffering and reach that, oh, desired liberation and enlightenment. So yogis use these tools and techniques, these aesthetic means to control the body and mind of the desires, the yearning or the uncontrollable impulse to want to act out in sensual, sexual ways, and use these technologies or tools or practices to actually draw that energy up the Sushumna. So how they do this, this is more of a tantric practice. It's explained in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, the Garanda Samhita, and the Shiva Sutras as well, of certain ways in which you gather this energy and draw it up the Sushumna. So we are going to create an understanding of our pelvic floor and create a lot of sensation there. So we want to activate the physical, energetic, mental, emotional sensations around the pelvic floor, noticing that you have a pubic bone, a tailbone, and 2 sit bones like the base of a teepee, and your pelvic floor is like a teepee. So in women, the top of the teepee is your cervix. For men, it's your prostate. And mula is the perineum lifting towards that top of the teepee. Vajroli is your front passage muscles drawing towards the top of that teepee. So it's like you're trying to stop yourself peeing, vajroli. Ashwini, your back passage muscles, draw up towards that top of the teepee. So it's like you're trying to prevent a sneaky leaky. So Ashwini is the back passage, the front passage, vajroli, and then the middle passage, mula. Now we're going to integrate this with Jaladhara Bandha, Jala, which in which we regulate the inflow and outflow. Bowing your chin, inhale, putting a lid on your container and increasing that prana down. And as you exhale, the pelvic floor muscles and Uddiyana help raise that energy up the Sushumna, and you lift your chin and release. So when we are bowing the chin and lifting the chin, working with bandhas, we're working more with Kriya because we're kind of trying to clear a pathway, cleanse, purify a pathway in which ideally Kundalini will release around her Shiva Lingam, who she's wrapped around 3.5 times. Her brilliant illuminated light will pierce through each of the chakras, ascending up towards the crown of the head, blissfully awakening to her beloved Shiva or Brahma consciousness, and then draw that consciousness down into our own heart, where they create this union or a love affair in your own heart, and you awaken to your true self, your true true big self, who you truly are, not just like your labels or your name or, you know, your family. It's really what you are, what you have always been, what you will always be, is the underlying layer of all creation, and you recognize itself as you abiding in your heart. Which is always an interesting one. They're like, don't have sex or think about sex, but merge in a very intimate way, Shakti and Shiva at your own heart, and they love make. And so there's a lot of weird, I think any, you know, doctrine, religion that suppresses sex, it's going to have some issues. And this might trigger you in many different ways. It has me. But what I'm trying to really convey is that there is a way in which we can empower ourselves with Shakti, this creative energy, this pulse of the feminine in manifest form. It's not to suppress or to deny yourself of your own sensuality or sexuality. Embrace it. Have fun with it. It's a creative energy that heightens your awareness and that really opens you to that fire of prana, your vital energy. But what it's trying to do is connect you with a boundary in which you draw that energy instead of imposing it on others for your own self-seeking manipulation and sexual exploit, that you respect others' autonomy and really about creating healthier boundaries of understanding what is motivating you in having relationship with them. So seeing them as the divine, you as the divine. When we say namaste, we recognize the light within us and we respect that light within them, and that we morally, ethically restrain ourselves from actually creating, you know, unnecessary karma. So there is this way in which you respect someone else and you respect yourself. So in Sutra 238 is where the teachings in the Yoga Sutras talk about brahmacharya and the benefits. It says, when walking in awareness of the highest reality, Brahma, that is firmly established, you acquire great strength and a capacity to experience this vira, and it is acquired because of your act of walking with the divine and experiencing it in you as you, and working with you and for you to wake you up to its presence in everything that you awaken to it. So what it's trying to say, in my interpretation, is the benefits promote the student to conserve your energy instead of, like, in a class, you know, like trying to get someone's attention by sensually having the intention of manipulating someone to come out of their practice or the teacher, that you turn that energy in from the pelvic floor and draw that energy towards your own awakening, to play with this access of this increased power and energy that opens you to your own inner strength and your ability to skillfully direct that vital force, prana, that creative energy of Shakti, to awaken within you. And that leads you towards a more of a samadhi state where you feel whole, one, complete, that deep contentment within, opening you to serenity, a tranquility, and equanimity in your own body, mind, and heart, that you're not totally kind of gripped with the physical, energetic, mental, emotional suffering of, I so want them to notice me, and so I'm going to manipulate a situation in which I use my powers to draw them in. So this brahmacharya is really about respecting boundaries and creating an environment in which we can engage with ourselves as well as everybody else as we see the divine and we walk this path of yoga, not just on our mats, but off of our mats. So as I was saying is that we're going to work with a Kriya practice, but in some cases, we're going to keep Jaladhara Bandha down. And what we're doing is a mudra. So we're sealing that energy in, trying to build that prana even bigger, so that our vital energy even bigger. So we're really trying to lift our pelvic floor muscles, Jaladhara Bandha, and it increases that pranic heat and light. And remembering that we're increasing this prana for reasons. We activate the prana, we churn this prana, we ignite this prana, we consolidate it, and then we direct it towards higher states of consciousness. Those are the five stages, according to the Garanda Samhita, of working with our prana. Now, if you want to direct it towards, you know, a sexual conquest, okay. But majority of us are coming to our mat because we want to direct that energy towards a place in which we feel at one whole, that we feel a lasting fulfillment, that it provides more meaning and purpose to our life, that we connect to that purpose and feel a deep contentment within, and that it frees us and we experience true freedom from whatever is causing us stress and tension and pain and sorrow and hurt, that we free ourselves and we feel that oneness, wholeness, completeness of that brahmanic experience of our true self, the divine that is within everything and within us, and that we feel a part of it and it a part of us. So with this practice, we're going to work, like I said, on Vajroli, Ashwini, and Mula with Jaladhara Bandha. When we move our chin up and down, it's more of a Kriya. When we keep our chin down and keep working the pelvic floor, it becomes a mudra, that seal. And so that's sealing that energy. And then we move again. We're just working up and down. So we'll work with the breath. Inhale, descend. Exhale, ascend. So working with the Vayu of breath. Inhale and exhale. And then as you notice, what you're going to notice is your consciousness. So look at the outer perimeter of the eyes, the lens in which you are perceiving, and notice that I-ness, that consciousness, that awarefulness, that wakefulness, that mindfulness that is seeing right now. That light that is lighting that consciousness, that I-ness is seeking to see yourself. That I-ness is seeking to see you as itself. You are trying to see yourself as Brahma. And how do you move in your practice? How do you walk? How do you engage? How do you conduct yourself? How do you really intimately behave, that inner dialogue, your feelings, what comes up? How do you move and walk as if the divine is walking through your body and practicing your asana practice? So that I want to try to inspire brahmacharya in this practice.
If you would like to continue to practice, find out more information about the topics discussed, or to donate to this podcast, please visit zephyryoga.com or follow the link in the episode description. I thank you.